Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Happy 250th birthday, America! I've decided to spend this semi-quincentennial as our founding fathers would have wanted me to, checking out the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I know I can find everything from ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats and stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage to best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging storage, and those signature Bobopedic seats. Because nothing is more American than a sofa that's a bed and a library and a closet. So, if you want to join me in decking out your house with the finest affordable furniture this 4th of July, why not stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe here with you. Matt Harmon continues his trek across the European nations. He's still on vacation, folks. But that's okay. The show must go on. We've got a couple of great beat reporters here. We're going to be talking about the Buffalo Bills and the San Francisco 49ers. Matt Beauvais covers the Bills. Tim Kawakami, a long-time, well-respected 49ers journalist here who has covered the NFL for a very long time as well, is going to be joining the program. All right, let's go. I'm actually really excited to talk Buffalo Bills football here with Matt Beauvais, sports director at WKBW, co-host of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, that podcast that he co-hosts with Sal Capaccio. Matt, man, we appreciate the time, brother.
No, thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to it.
Man, let's just dive right into it. The big offseason acquisition of DJ Moore early on. What have you seen from DJ? Because, I mean, let's be real. He is known as a mercurial guy.
Yeah.
What have the first impressions been with DJ Moore?
I think they are definitely putting in the work now to make sure that they are on the same page come September, and that means on and off the field. So the thing about the Buffalo Bills, and one of the things that they pride themselves on, and I think when other people get here, they're a little surprised. They're like, hey, this team is super close because there's not a whole else ton to do here, right? Like they spend a ton of time with each other. Like the big conversation when the Bills traded for Stephon Diggs was that he and Josh Allen would play Call of Duty together all the time and they would get on the same page. And that's kind of how they became teammates. And that chemistry carried over to the field. So I think for DJ Moore, it was like, hey, let's get him in here. Let's get him acclimated as quick as we can, not just from a football standpoint, but from all of the other stuff. Like, hey guys, this is when we go out for pizza. This is when we go to the bar together. This is when we do this stuff. Let's build that bond there. And then from what we've been able to see on the football fields, like, they are forcing the ball to DJ Moore a lot, because I think they know he's probably going to be their number one wide receiver, and Josh wants to get on the same page as him. Because for Josh Allen especially, like, chemistry goes a long way. He does not throw the ball to guys that he does not trust. And, you know, I'm sure that's going to be a conversation that we have about some of the other guys down the road. But, like, trust maybe for Josh Allen is more than anything else, more than, like, getting open, more than how talented they are. He needs to trust his wide receiver. It's why for so many years we saw Gabe Davis have as big of a role as he had.
Right.
It's why it, right. It's why
Gabe Davis, bro.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Gabe Davis, who left and then really couldn't do anything and then came back and then immediately was getting thrown to again. Right. Like, for some reason he had it with Brandon Cooks last year in the little bit we saw. We haven't seen it with Keon. We haven't seen it with Curtis Samuel. Like, we didn't see it there. I think he wants to make sure that he and DJ Moore are on the same page. So far, they're forcing it. There's been some good and there's been some bad, but they still have some time to get on the same page.
I got to imagine, too, that the familiarity with Joe Brady may help DJ Moore quite a bit. How has that transition been?
It's interesting, because I think Joe Brady is almost overcompensating that he's not the offensive coordinator anymore and that he is the head coach. Like, we were told a story from – it's interesting because, like, it takes that – that different level of, like, oh yeah, this isn't always just about football. So Connor McGovern, the Bills center, shared a really interesting story the other day where I asked him a similar question. And he was like, for years, Joe was the support system for Josh Allen whenever he made a mistake. But right. Josh threw an interception during practice and Joe, like, was celebrating with the defense in Josh's peripheral vision to let him know, like, hey, I'm the defensive I'm not just the offensive coordinator. I'm the guy who's calling the shots. I'm the head coach now.
Interesting.
So it's a really interesting thing that's happening, because the offense has always raved about Joe Brady from a football standpoint and from just, like, a personality standpoint. Now the defensive guys we talk to are starting to say the same things of, like, we didn't know how cool and laid back this guy is. The way I'll say it is, it's much looser at practice right now. Now, I think we're still in a little bit of a honeymoon phase, right?
Sure.
I think it's no different than in life. If you're in a relationship for a long time and then you move on, the next person you get, everything seems like it's going great until you face any adversity. The Bills have not faced any adversity yet, right? This is the offseason. They just finished mandatory minicamp. But they really like Joe Brady and they really trust Joe Brady. So I think the offense has felt that way for years. Now the defense is starting to feel that same way. And, you know, I think baked into that is the familiarity he has with DJ Moore, how effective DJ Moore was under Joe Brady, even though a lot of the other guys on that offense weren't. Like, there's a reason why Joe Brady didn't even make it a full 2 years when he was in Carolina.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to be overcautious with, though, is that Curtis Samuel also fell into that bucket. Curtis Samuel had his most productive seasons in Carolina with Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator, then came to Buffalo and could never really make it work. Now, I think DJ Moore is, of course, a much more talented player than Curtis Samuel ever has been. But that's, like, the only one pause that I have of, like, well, maybe it's not as smooth of a transition, even though there is some chemistry baked in.
Well, Matt, I think this might go to your point, too, that if Josh Allen and DJ Moore are trying to make it work from a chemistry perspective, I got to imagine that never really happened with Curtis Samuel.
No, definitely not. I think Josh has a type. And I think for a couple years, they tried to make Josh play a game that it's not that he wasn't comfortable playing, but they were so focused on trying to find guys who could get yards after the catch that it almost made Josh play a little bit differently. So I think they brought in Curtis Samuel for that reasoning of, like, hey, this guy gets open, but he can make things happen with the ball in his hands after the fact. And he just had a little bit of a skill set that was too similar to some of the other guys that they had. So he never really was able to shine. And because he was never really, injuries also took a part in this. He had lingering injuries his entire time here. So if you're not going to be on the field, it's hard to build that chemistry right off the rip. And that was the problem with Curtis Samuel. So no, I don't ever think he had it. I think it's continuing to be built with Keon Coleman. I don't think he has it with Joshua Palmer, at least not yet. They're trying with DJ Moore. The only guys, like, currently he really, I think, is on the same page with is Khalil Shakir And then Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox too. Like for sure, Dawson Knox, maybe more than anybody, but in the passing game, those guys and the receivers, or excuse me, the running backs as well, definitely with James Cook, definitely with Ty Johnson. But yeah, from the receivers, like they've got some work to do, even though I would say this wide receiver room is at least more talented than what they've had, at least since Diggs left.
Keon Coleman, you mentioned it. Keon Coleman has also talked about, okay, this is kind of sort of a make or break year for him. How has he been in camp? And again, where is the team at? Where is Joe Brady at? Where is Josh Allen at with Keon Coleman?
It's not about football with Keon. And that's the thing that is so tricky to evaluate from our perspective of sitting there watching practices, because so many times we're out at practice and he makes these great plays and we're like, why is this not translating? It was the same thing last year. Last year during training camp, if you would have polled every media member that it was at all of training camp and said, who was your most impressive player during camp? I bet half of them are saying Keon Coleman. And then he gets into the and then this is why it's weird. Then he gets into the regular season and he has a phenomenal game against the Ravens. Like, is one of the biggest reasons why they have that huge win against the Ravens to start the year on Sunday Night Football.
Yep.
And then it's just, so I don't know if it's like the mental side. I don't know if it's, I mean, he was late a bunch and that continued to be a problem. And then he was disciplined and then that was keeping him off the field. And that goes back to the chemistry conversation. So far, it's so good. But I think a lot of the fan base here in Buffalo is like, I don't care right now. Like, I don't care that he's making these plays during mandatory minicamp and that he's going to be doing it again. The thing I will say is that right now, for a Bills base offense and 11 personnel, I very much still think that Keon Coleman is part of that. I think right now, the three wide receivers they're rolling out more often than not will be DJ Moore, Khalil Shakir, and Keon Coleman. So I feel like he's got more, at least, than Joshua Palmer. And I also just think Gabe Davis will be back on this team at some point, but he's recovering from an injury late. So yeah. I think right now, like, it's Keon's job to lose, and there's really not anybody knocking on the door to challenge him as their X receiver.
Okay, so when we do a lot of, we do obviously do a ton of charting here, and when we look at Keon Coleman, we have found at Reception Perception that on the line, playing outside X may not be the best roles for him. So now they've got DJ Moore here who can give you some X receiver snaps, right? That being said, I think everyone would agree that DJ Moore should not be locked into this on the line X receiver role. Like, he's got to move around too, right? But does that, having DJ Moore in the building, does that allow Keon Coleman to then actually play off the ball, play that flanker slot position where we at Reception Perception really believe that if Keon Coleman is going to make a difference, he's got to be off the ball. And yes, he can play outside, but he's got to get some slot snaps too.
Yeah, definitely. The Bills now have options, which has been something that they haven't had, at least for the last couple of years since Stephon Diggs went away, because I tend to agree with you. I'm one of those people who's like, I want to see Keon Coleman used all over the place. I don't think he is being best utilized. Just, hey, go stand on the boundary, be our X receiver. But then the question that they run into is, how do they use Dalton Kincaid and Khalil Shakir? Because they really like Khalil Shakir in the slot. And Dalton Kincaid, up to this point, has basically only been on the field in obvious passing down situations because he's not a super stout blocker. So when Dalton Kincaid comes onto the field, it's like, okay, he's there. You really like Khalil Shakir. How do you then incorporate Keon Coleman? Now, having DJ Moore, I think, will allow them to move these pieces all around. And it also gives them a little bit of a buffer because the wide receiver position has not stayed super healthy in Buffalo these last couple of years. So as these injuries happen, I think it just gives them one more peg down the depth chart of like, okay, we can do this, we can do this. So I think DJ Moore is probably going to be like a 50-50 split as when he's at X and when he's at Z. I think Keon will still primarily be at X, but I also think they'll get a little bit more creative with him and move him around a bit, which I think he could benefit from. And I think the offense could benefit from as they try and continue to become a bit more explosive. They've been a good, a really good offense for these last couple of years, but I think they need to try and find some explosive plays, and I think that could help.
Yeah, down the field, Josh Allen really struggled last year. And again, it's just sometimes it just feels like he's putting on that Superman cape just too often. Like, give me some base plays. Like, what are the meat and potatoes of a Buffalo offense? Can we just get some chunk plays, some first down, make it a little easier for Josh so that he's not carrying the load each and every week, man? Okay. I know that you talked about Dalton Kincaid. We haven't even talked about James Cook. My God, what a great player that they've got yeah. in the backfield too. It's an offense that feels like it is loaded. Yet when I look at the wide receiver room, Matt, I still feel like it's awfully light. And I know they made that big move to go get DJ Moore, but the depth to me yeah. is just not there.
I feel like they're missing one more guy. And I yep. feel like if they had one more guy, then you would really, really like the wide receiver room. And it's why so many of us here in Buffalo have been yearning for them to draft a receiver with a premium pick these last couple of years, just because if my, and I guess that's what they did with Keon. It just hasn't worked out to this point.
Yeah.
If DJ Moore was a 1B and they had a 1A and then Khalil Shakir was the 3, you'd say that's a really, really fun wide receiver room. Now, the emergence of a little bit of Dalton Kincaid, but mostly James Cook has made the offense still very, very effective.
Right.
But when I think of the Bills' offense just being damn near impossible to stop, I think of 2020 and 2021 when they had Stephon Diggs, John Brown, Cole Beasley, and Gabe Davis. That is a crazy combination to have because Cole Beasley was so good in the slot and Stephon Diggs was so good moving all over the field. So yeah. I agree with you. I think they probably need one more guy. They are betting on that being Keon Coleman. So we had this entire conversation of like, is this lip service? Are they just going to flip Keon Coleman for a 6th-round pick and call it a day? They don't think that way. They still yeah. think that Keon Coleman has the potential to be a 1B to DJ Moore being a 1A and Khalil still being your really solid slot receiver that can be effective. So I agree with you. I don't think they agree with you.
Yeah, the scary thing I think for Buffalo fans, and if you're just a fan of Josh Allen and this team in general, is just, man, that's a risky gamble. Mm-hmm. That is a risk. Yeah. Because I tell you what, if Keon Coleman does not work out, again, this room looks really, really shallow and really, really light.
Well, think about the play that we have talked about in Buffalo ad nauseum and that was getting a ton of play around the country was the Brandon Cooks completion, not completion in the Broncos game.
Right.
The biggest sin of all of that is that they're throwing to Brandon Cooks in that situation. Why in the 2nd round of the playoffs are the Buffalo Bills throwing to Brandon Cooks, Mecole Hardman, and Keon Coleman off of a year where he was getting benched a ton? But that not was just good. The reality of the not situation. Good. So yeah, the room is better, but that's not saying a ton at this point. I do really think that DJ Moore is going to be a nice fit with this offense. I really do. But I have a lot of questions about everybody else not named DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir.
You talked about Joe Brady bringing a little bit of that energy. It's got to be a little bit different just because Sean McDermott is an older dude and Joe Brady's obviously coming with at a much younger age here. But just I just think about Sean McDermott as he's known, supposed to be known as a defensive guy. Obviously, I think that was his downfall was that defensively they just weren't there. That being said, he is a defensive minded coach, right? And so that can sometimes put some handcuffs and shackles on your OC. Now that Joe Brady has elevated into that big chair, how much has that made a difference in terms of what does the offense look like? Are they trying to get more explosive? Are they just moving around the field a little bit more? And have they really, again, taken those shackles off of Joe Brady and just letting that creative mind flow?
I think they'll probably have a few more shot plays in their arsenal this year than they have had in years past, just because they have been so kind of risk averse with the offense and being yep. like, hey, and that's a lot of what you just talked about with Sean McDermott of like, hey, the defense is going to keep you in games, but it's probably not going to make a ton of splash plays. Just don't turn the ball over. Don't screw up. And then, right. you know, it oftentimes that has not worked. Like in the Broncos game, they screwed up and just a really inconsistent day for Josh Allen. But I think with DJ Moore and the success he's been able to have down the field, I think with another year of Keon Coleman and a healthy Dalton Kincaid, maybe that more than anything, I feel like there's going to be a couple more shot plays to be had. And that's where they're going to try and find the explosion. Because with Sean McDermott, it was let's get yak, let's get yards after the catch, let's make it easier on Josh Allen's life. And I just don't think that's the game he loves to play. I think he loves to play like the hey, Gabe Davis has got a 19-yard like average depth of target, and we're just going to continue to throw it down the field and see if we can make something happen. So I think there's going to be a bit more risk, But then I also think that will come with a bit more reward.
I love it.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Okay, you talked about Dalton Kincaid here. You actually posed on your, I think it was on your podcast very recently. Yeah. Could Dalton Kincaid lead the Bills in receiving? In receiving? This is with DJ Moore in the building here. Walk me through why you believe that that could potentially be the case.
So I don't think it will, but I do think that it's at least an interesting conversation to have. And
for sure,
a lot of the reasoning is because when Dalton Kincaid has been healthy, he has been very effective. Now, the problem is he has not been healthy. You have to go back to his rookie year to really see when he has been an impact player, but he has been relatively healthy in the playoffs these last couple of years, and that's where we've seen the impact. So I wrote it down. In the Broncos game, 6 targets, 6 catches, 83 yards and a touchdown. In the Jags game, he also had a touchdown. He had 3 catches in that game. So I think if you take that and you put that sample size into an entire season, it's at least a conversation, because I know Josh trusts Dalton Kincaid. That's one thing I definitely know, is that he trusts his tight ends, especially Dawson Knox, but also Dalton Kincaid. They're very, very good friends off of the field. And I just think that they believe Dalton Kincaid is getting ready to take the next step, because the last couple of years have been so plagued by injuries. Khalil Shakir is another interesting factor, because mm-hmm. he's very consistent and very solid. What we need to figure out in Buffalo is, was the DJ Moore regression statistically last year because there were so many cooks in the kitchen in Chicago, yeah. or is he in the second half of his career and he's now taking a little bit of a step back? The Bills certainly hoping that's not the case. They're thinking, hey, Luther Burden's great, Rome Odunze's really good. There were so many mouths to feed in Chicago that somebody was going to be the odd man out, and last year it was DJ Moore. He's going to have a bigger role for sure this year in Buffalo. But is it 100 targets? Is it 120 targets? I don't know the answer to that yet. Right now, if I was guessing with Dalton Kincaid, I think it's probably going to be at least 90 targets. And if he catches 75 of those, that's still 25 more catches than DJ Moore had last year while in Chicago. So
sure.
I think it's going to be DJ Moore, but I don't think it'll be insane if it's Dalton Kincaid. And I also don't think it would be a bad thing if it was Dalton Kincaid.
This is a trend that we have seen in the NFL, that so many more teams are going to this 12 personnel, 2 tight ends on the field, right? And if that ends up being the case, obviously we're looking at Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid out there. Your 2 wide receivers, I would imagine, right now is DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that being said, Joe Brady, I think, has done a lot of 11 personnel stuff. Is there a, again, the trend in the NFL right now is let's go heavy. Are we seeing that in Buffalo, or is Joe Brady, again, going to kind of sort of try to spread them out a little bit, get three wide receivers out there and see what we can do?
Yeah, you'll see 12 personnel occasionally. You'll see 13 personnel occasionally. And obviously 11, I feel like, is still kind of their base offense. They've really, really liked Dawson. That said, the interesting piece here is Jackson Hawes, because they really like Jackson Hawes and has become an asset in the run game. Like legitimately, it's almost like having an extra offensive lineman on the field. He has been that good. The talk this offseason has been, how can we get him on the field even more? So that's where I'm like, would they ever do Jackson Hawes and Dalton Kincaid as opposed to Dawson and Dalton Kincaid to that'd kind of good. Like, that'd be interesting, right? Because then you could, so like, that'd be fun. So I don't exactly know what to expect. I think it'll be a heavy blend of both. And then it's a lot of Keon, right? It's like, what do you expect from Keon? Is Keon, because when you said I would expect it would be DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir, I would agree with you. I think right now, if we were asking them this and it wasn't like in front of a camera, they might say Keon and DJ Moore in that situation, which is crazy. They're still really high on Keon.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, he gives you a big body in the run game, right? So if you are going to go 12 and try to run that football, it does make sense to get Keon out there, at least to see if he can get engaged on the run game side of it. That's so interesting, man. I don't know. The addition of DJ Moore gives them options now.
Yes, definitely.
And I think that's probably the most important thing about this addition.
Yeah, I agree. I think it gives them options. I think, like I mentioned a little bit ago, just with the depth chart and how lean we have seen it get in big situations. You know, I already mentioned the Broncos game last year. How about the AFC Championship the year before that, where their leading receiver was Mac Hollins in that game? And like, shout out Mac Hollins for a good game. But why is Mac Hollins the leading receiver for a team that loses by three in the AFC Championship? That is a problem. So I do think that it bumps everybody down. The other interesting X factor here is Joshua Palmer. And it's just because last year, I think at this point, we were talking about, hey, this will be a nice additional guy, not the same skill set at all as Mac Hollins, but probably a safe assumption that he's going to at least have that big of a role on the offense. And then he never did because he was just really inconsistent and then hurt. But I think back to the Ravens game, like he had a couple really nice catches in that game. I think back to a Monday Night Football game against the Falcons, where he had a huge first drive. He gets hurt and then he's out of the rest of the game and he misses a bunch of time after that. I'd say right now I feel really confident that there's four wide receivers that I know are going to be on the team. And it's DJ Moore, Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, and Skylar Bell, just because they used a big asset on him. After that, I would assume it's Josh Palmer is their number five or number four or whatever. Skylar Bell's making the team. But what does he bring you? Because I still think there's going to be situations where Keon and Josh Palmer are almost like the sacrificial X wide receivers to try and create opportunities for DJ Moore at Z or Khalil Shakir at Y.
I would agree with that. And I think that's probably the best usage of Keon if he is going to play outside X. If you're trying to get him the football to make plays, though, I think he's got to be off the line, man.
Yeah.
Man, you just hit on it. And there's two players that I once talked about. Skylar Bell won. But still, there still seems to be some smoke in regards to Stephon Diggs and a reunion there in Buffalo. I know that they've talked that down a little bit, but again, I look at the depth chart. I do wonder if Stephon Diggs makes a little bit of sense here too.
I think it does make sense from a football standpoint, but I don't think it makes sense from an everything else standpoint. Just, when Joe Brady took over as offensive coordinator, the Bills offense, and I don't know how much of this was Sean, they became much more consistent, but Stephon Diggs kind of became a secondary option. And that felt like this divisiveness and drama started. And that's ultimately right before he got moved, right? Like, Joe Brady takes over, the offense starts to score seven more points a game, but Stephon Diggs' numbers plummeted. And the last in image we have in Buffalo was a deep shot against the Chiefs where it goes through his hands. And you see the screenshot of like, how does he not bring that in? I just feel like there's still a really like there's a lot there that I don't think they would be willing to take on. There's a lot of baggage, even though Stephon Diggs is still talented, and I still think definitely from a football standpoint would make this wide receiver room better. Skylar Bell's a fun player to talk about because they seem really high on him, and they seem like they think he's going to be a really solid fit in this offense.
Yeah, what does he bring to the table, man?
Well, the first thing we saw was a red zone drill where Josh just ripped him a ball, and it hit his hands and went straight in the air. And I think he was dumbfounded at how hard Josh Allen throws the football, because he kind of looked around, and they all started laughing, and they're like, yeah, welcome to the NFL. Like, it's a little different than whoever was throwing to you at UConn going to Josh Allen. Yeah. I think they view him as a bit of a chess piece. I think they view him as somebody who, even though his size, can probably play at X, but can definitely play at Z and can probably even line up a little bit inside. So I think they like the versatility piece. And I also think they just like the having another player here in case there is something that happens to DJ Moore or there is something that happens to one of those other guys. The only other name we haven't talked about is I still think there's a 50-50 shot that Brandon Cooks is on this team within the next couple months, just because
I don't hate it.
He was effective. I know the last in memory is what happened in Denver. He was very effective when he was here quickly, because he is just like a guy who gets open, right? And if he's going to be their fifth or sixth wide receiver, I still think there is some upside there.
How fast must Brandon Cooks be able to pick up a playbook, man? This guy's so moved around so many times. He's played in so many different offenses, and he's a plug-and-play dude. Like, again, I'm not saying he's a Hall of Fame guy, but man, when you look up like the definition of a professional wide receiver, Brandon Cooks' image should be right there, man.
So good. They got him last year, and it was in mid to late November, and then they played a game against the Steelers that Sunday. It was a Sunday afternoon game, and I remember we were sitting there, and it was on the first or second drive of the game where Allen hit Cooks on an out route for a big first down conversion on a third down. And we all kind of like looked at each other and we're like, this guy got here 5 days ago and he's already being used like this, which also says a lot about the roster and what they were lacking there. But he just kind of continued to chip away, and there were some drop issues in the beginning. He had a really huge play for them against the Jags in the playoffs, with the Bills going down the field and setting themselves up to take the lead. Like, a huge catch in that game. He had a couple of really big catches that kind of get pushed off to the side against the Eagles late in that game because they missed on a 2-point conversion and lost. But yeah, like, I could see that happening. Like, if you were telling me Brandon Cooks or the field, and the field being any other wide receivers that are out there, I would take Brandon Cooks.
I love it. Okay, I've held you for way too long here, and for whatever reason, we haven't even talked about the defense. Again, Sean McDermott is gone. The focus on the defense is certainly shifted now, right? So now we've bring in a DC in Jim Leonard. What is the biggest change and difference in terms of energy, schematics? What are we looking at here defensively?
Well, they switched basically from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And I know in 2026, that doesn't mean what it meant 10 or 15 years ago, because I still think we're going to see a lot of the same things we have seen. I just think that there will be much more, and I mentioned this about offense, but definitely on defense, boom or bust. I feel like there's going to be, because the Sean McDermott MO for all of these years has been, we do not get beat over the top. Yep, we will make plays in the red zone, and we will hold teams to 3 points. But then more time comes off the clock. That puts more pressure on the offense to be a more clean game. I think there's going to be games when they give up huge plays, but they're also going to get to the quarterback more, probably take the ball away more, and those will be welcomed things in Buffalo, just because I do think after a while the defense kind of came up short, especially in the playoffs. Not so much this past year. That was more because the offense turned the ball over so much. But years prior, it'd be like, yeah, the defense is good statistically in the regular season, but then what about when they get to the playoffs? Jim Leonard comes from the Rex Ryan tree of like, hey, we're going to blitz. We're going to get after the quarterback. I think they're going to do that a lot. I feel really good about the Bills secondary right now. Still have some questions about the linebacker spot and the defensive line, but Christian Benford is a very solid cornerback. Yep. I think Max Harrison's got a lot of juice to his game, and if he can stay on the field, he can be pretty nice. And Cole Bishop's, I think, he's not a star because he's a safety, but like he's ascending.
No, he's good.
He's really good. And CJ Gardner-Johnson, there's a reason this is his fifth team in 5 years, but the dude can play. Like the dude makes plays. And I think that they've needed a guy like that.
Sure.
Like they've needed one of those players. So they've got some pieces. I don't think their defense is going to be great, but I think it'll be pretty good.
They've got to make turnovers. They've got to hit sacks.
Yeah.
When I look at the depth of their defense, I just don't think they're going to hold up in terms of, okay, we got to limit. Again, if this defense is going to play well, they've got to make plays and splash plays, because otherwise I think they're just going to get worn down. I don't think they're deep enough defensively to take on some of the big boys in the AFC.
I agree with you. I think that we have a ton of questions about the defensive line because they've thrown so many resources on the defensive line and it hasn't turned into much. We don't know what Landon Jackson is. He's added 30 pounds and he's going to be a defensive lineman this year. Last year, he didn't do anything. He played in like 3 games. They used a second round pick that they traded up for last year on TJ Sanders. Didn't make an impact really at all. Dwayne Carter was a third round pick the year prior. He had a season-ending injury before the season even started last year. So what are these guys? Because if these are players that are day two draft picks, they should be contributing at least in a rotational role. And they haven't been. So that's my question of like, are these guys okay? Are they good? Because if they're good, then I feel like the defense could take a step. But if they're just not it, then I bring all the points that you made of like, I just don't know how they hold up.
All right. So there you go. That's Matt Beauvais, sports director at WKBW and co-host of the It's Always a Game Day in Buffalo podcast with his guy, Sal Capaccio. Go find that on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Matt, we appreciate the time.
Thank you.
We've got Tim Kawakami, columnist over at the SF Standard, longtime NFL and 49ers beat reporter. Go find his podcast, The TK Show, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Tim, we appreciate you joining us.
You got it. Good to be with you.
Well, we got to talk 49ers here. There's a lot going on there in the Bay Area. What in the world is going on with the 49ers and Brandon Ayuk? Can you give us the latest there?
It is funny to hear from people like, what? Like you can maybe checking in none of them, not us, who are like have dealt with this for a couple of years now.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. There's really nothing new other than both sides are being incredibly stubborn. It's just a bad breakup where, you know, if one side thinks the other one wants to get it over with quicker than the other, they're going to delay. Then the other side, oh, you think you want to get it over with quicker? I'm going to delay too. It's such a simple way to conclude this. Is Brandon Ayuk to show up to a 49er something and say, okay, I'm here and now you can cut me. Because until he does that, the 49ers, it does not count on their cap. He does not count as a roster spot. They can keep doing this. It's gotten pretty petty on both sides, but it's the same thing. The 49ers said it, right? John Lynch said it. He's not going to play another snap for the 49ers. He is not going to. None of this is any involvement on his future of the 49ers. It's just a matter when the past really officially starts. I thought it would be with the draft when they realized they couldn't get any kind of draft pick for him in a trade. Then I thought it might be right before OTAs when they just wouldn't want him to show up. It's going to continue. I imagine it'll be at some point before training camp or right at the start of training camp. Who knows? It's just a bad breakup. And I keep saying that neither one of them could really quit each other because you really could end it, right? Either one of them could end this.
Oh, easily.
But they're both just want to spite each other to keep going as long as possible. It's silly, but this relationship got silly a long time ago and it's just continued to, you know, spin out. And we're just kind of watching again. If you cover the 49ers every day, you know, he was an ex-49er in everything but name, you know, like last July. But it just, I guess 49ers are saying we can just keep him. It's not counting against our cap.
Right.
So why don't we just keep them? And let's make sure he doesn't get an easy walk right over to Washington. That's what I believe, and I've reported this. I think they suspect there was some influence from Washington or Jaden Daniels or somebody over there to get Ayuk believing that he didn't need the 49ers anymore. I don't think they're really thrilled with that. So if it delays what Washington can do with him, he can't get in their offseason program. Who knows? Who knows with him? I don't know what he's doing, but it messes with him a little bit. It messes with Washington. And then Ayuk's thinking of messing with the 49ers because they have to deal with these questions. You know, he's so online. He's terminally online. It's just clear. He's fascinated by the attention he gets by these cryptic comments. We're talking about him. And nothing happens, but people still talk about him like he's this great player, which he hasn't been, mostly due to injuries, but also due to some of this since 2023. He certainly wasn't a great player in 2024 before he got hurt. Then he got hurt and then he didn't play all 2025. We're still talking about him. Why? It's because this stuff keeps going.
I think it's because we're hanging on to the memory of an unbelievable 2023.
Yes, he was really good. He was really good.
He was crazy good. And again, anytime you're talking about a player at the wide receiver position, playing for the 49ers, man, I mean, you know, it's one of the marquee franchises of the NFL. That is for sure. Why he doesn't just, again, show up and get cut immediately, it's only hurting him. I trying to get into the mind of Brandon Ayuk is probably a lost cause, but I don't get it. Like, if you show up, you get cut, you move on, you get to go play football in Washington, which everyone is reporting, right? So it's like, okay, great. Let's just do that. I don't understand. You're only hurting yourself by missing all of this time not playing football.
It's because that's what the 49ers want in his mind. He's not going to do that. He's already given up $27 million in guarantees, which that's the one that confounds me. Like, he does nothing. He does nothing but sit at home and report to rehab, right? That's what he had to do. You get $27 million guaranteed this season. He completely walked away from that. He did not dispute it when the 49ers rescinded it. From then on, I can't tell you what he's doing, right? That's the most irrational thing you can imagine.
Okay, so they obviously had a need at wide receiver. They go and land Mike Evans, who I was surprised by how affordable Mike Evans was, honestly. Can you provide any background on how the 49ers did land Mike Evans? Just because, again, I have to imagine at that price, he had to have had a lot of suitors.
Mike Evans, I think, just would appeal to him, having George Kittle call him, having Trent Williams want him there. These are, you know, we can raise our eyebrows at it, but this is important to hear from people that, you know, on his level, on Mike Evans' level, who are saying, come here and we can go win playoff games. We can go up against the Rams and the Seahawks. And I think that appealed to him. The grown-up nature of this appealed to a grown-up. And I think that can be at that, you know, at stage of your career, and people aren't throwing $50 million guaranteed at him anymore. They're just not. Again, I'm uncertain about what these contracts really actually are when people say them. I don't want to knock them down, but it's guaranteed money, right? And I just don't know that a lot more than $14.5 million was guaranteed. If there was more than that, 49ers probably would have had to pay a little bit more, and they didn't. I think there was some attractiveness to Brock Purdy. Maybe other fans don't think so, but he's pretty well suited for a Brock Purdy offense. He kind of contested balls, go up and get him in the end zone. They want him to score touchdowns. They want him to fight for the ball. They want him to be a calming influence. What they've done, you start with Ayuk. Mike Evans is the anti-Ayuk, you know, the anti-Debo, the anti-Juwan Jennings. They went through this in varying ways with three different very talented receivers, three different contractual problems, and they're not mature. And it wasn't, you know, George Kittle has a way of doing this. He pointed out, you know, Mike Evans, he's the first really veteran receiver we've had here since Emmanuel Sanders. And you know what? There were some receivers in there who had 1,000-yard seasons in there. But George goes back to Emmanuel Sanders in 2019, who was only there for half a season. Remember, he was traded for. But he was just a leader by example, and they had not had that. You know, often receivers are not leaders. We know that, right? They're very out on their own islands. They want the ball. Please give me the ball. But Mike Evans is the 49ers, whether it's intentional or not, seeking something that they did not have, certainly from Brandon Ayuk.
Okay, so obviously Mike Evans, a big-time veteran. We here at Reception Perception, man, we love Ricky Pearsall. Mm-hmm. A young player. I think he could absolutely explode this year. Obviously, he's got to stay healthy. Talk to me here a little bit about Ricky Pearsall. Are we too high on Ricky, and how has he looked early on?
Yeah, it hadn't been really working out in times that we've been seeing the OTAs and the canceled minicamp, obviously. So lots of injuries. That's why he doesn't often practice. He has a brief spurt and then he gets tackled. And like, you know, I don't want to be flippant about this, but I do sit and watch games next to Matt Barros, my co-host on the 49ers Plus Minus podcast. And every time he gets hit, I go, okay, he's hurt. And then I'm right most of the time. That is tough. That is tough in this league to not be able to get through games and or, you know, certainly not two or three games in a row. That's why they know they use their first pick, which was in the second round. They moved out of the first round on Deshaun Stribling, a receiver. They signed Mike Evans. They signed Christian Kirk. That is not the highest compliment or sign that they're sure about what they got at Ricky Pearson. Sure. I think they like him. I think he's a get open guy, which they really could use. They, you know, Juwan Jennings was not a get open guy. Juwan Jennings was he's going to be covered, but still throw the ball there. And it got deflected a lot because he wasn't open. I think Pearsall has the skill to do this. Listen, he had a big game in Seattle. That counts, right? That counts. But he also can't be counted on. You can't count on him until you know he's going to be the get through a full season, and he hasn't even come close. So it just does tell you something when, you know, Kyle Shanahan, a receiver's guy, goes out and gets Deshaun Stribling, Mike Evans, and Christian Kirk. Again, Pearsall could still win out. So, I mean, I think he's still odds on to be the third receiver at least, and maybe the second receiver, but it is a little bit of wavering in there. They love him. They do love him, but I don't see him often. And then in games, when you do see him, he lands on his legs and then he's usually out for a couple of weeks. That's a tough thing for me to say, but that's the league, and football teams have to operate on that knowledge of what they've seen, not what they hope.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
You touched on Deshaun Stribling just a little bit. What are the first impressions of the rookie?
Very settled dude. Like, again, I go, you know, I think they really kind of did this on purpose. This guy was not Marine father. Very solid guy. Older rookie. That's another theme of what they did. Kalen Black is 24, the running back. Yeah. Romello Height is 25, the linebacker they took. I believe Stribling's 23. And went to three different schools. Bigger receiver, hard to tell in OTAs, but got behind the defense one time for sure. Looked pretty smooth. We'll see. You're not really seeing him run real routes. They're not, obviously, no pads, nobody hitting him. But what you saw was presence, I think, And, you know, is he a guy who can, you know, take a 5-yard route and go up, turn up and just blow through people? They're sure hoping he is, but hard to tell. But I think you see the size and then you talk to him, you go, this guy is got his head on straight. And that's pretty important for the 49ers. And knowing the 49ers, like Kyle Shanahan's offense, what does he want from receivers? One, get receptions. Two, block in the running game.
Yeah, exactly.
And Juwan Jennings, I used to joke, like he was like a third tight end. Like he really was. Like if you saw him go in motion, I just like, that's where they're going to run. They're going to run behind him. Well, let's see if Stribling can block. That is his reputation. That's one of the reasons why they drafted him. He's certainly big enough to be a good blocker. He's got some size. And then, you know, with that athletic ability, it's not super sexy to talk about, but they really believe that one of the reasons they're running their big running game, you know, the Christian McCaffrey going the house did not happen last year.
Yeah.
They were missing some of that downfield blocking with receivers who wanted to block, wanted to take out safeties.
Interesting.
Way downfield. And they really do believe the Stribling. And they say Stribling shows up on the tape all over the place in college doing that.
Christian McCaffrey, he's 30 years old. It's an age where running backs generally see a good amount of decline here. He's coming off of a season where he averaged just 3.9 yards per carry, his lowest YPC average in 6 seasons, Tim. This whole offense seems to revolve around his workload. If he gets going, this is one of the best, maybe most unstoppable offenses in the NFL. But Shanahan has talked about maybe trying to limit his touches. We all kind of sort of like look at that and roll our eyes because it just never happens. Like he can't help himself. If CMC is out there, he's getting them touches, man. But is there any way that Shanny can actually limit the touches and workload that a 30-year-old running back coming off of, again, one of his most inefficient seasons that we've seen in a long time? Can Kyle Shanahan truly, honestly, try to find a way to limit his exposure this season?
One thing I will say, Kyle Shanahan will immediately say, by the way, he was really efficient in the receiving game, like really efficient. So he'll point that out. It's all part of the same thing. They did not run the ball well. They specifically, McCaffrey did not break loose at all. Like he had, I think, 2 rushes of over 20 yards, and that's just not what the system is built to be. The practical way for them to do it is to have a backup running back that they really trust. And, you know, they made the late trade for Brian Robinson Jr. last year, like late in camp, because the younger guys were getting banged up and they didn't love him. Isaac Rendo, they kind of lost faith in him. Brian Robinson, solid guy, has a good career. He's just not going to you're not going to go, let's take Christian McCaffrey off the field here in the third quarter of a game we're leading by 3. It's going to be a tough decision if it's Brian Robinson. I happen to like Jordan James, draft pick last year. He did get banked up in camp and kind of lost his place there. That's one thing if you're Shanahan, you're playing for Kyle Shanahan. If you're a young guy and you get banked up in camp, he kind of passes right past you. Like you lose your place. You don't get your place back. And that happened to Jordan James. That's when they traded for Brian Robinson Jr. They've drafted Kalen Black, another running back in the third round. They do that a lot. They miss on it almost every single time. We'll see.
They love it.
Isaac Arendo is hurt and got hurt last year. He's kind of been skipped over.
Yeah.
I think James and Black have a shot to be somebody that they believe could be, you know, this is what you, if you're Shanahan or if you're on the coaching staff and you take McCaffrey out, you're losing for 4 plays. You're losing 4 chances to go all the way to the house. It's a tough thing for and someone who pass protects and someone who defenses are just outrageously afraid of in the passing game. So it's a tough thing to do. They're going to do it. At some point, you have to do it. Maybe Kalen Black or Jordan James is like, we can go get you some yards. Like, you know, Jordan James played in the playoff game in Seattle. He wasn't very, you know, nobody was good in that game. But he looked like he's got some juice to him. I've always kind of been impressed with him.
Same.
Is he a guy that you can go, we're getting him 8 to 10 carries. That's it. Second series of the second quarter is his. I don't care what's happening. They have never done that with McCaffrey. Never. In some way, the offense stopped, you know, ground to a halt when they didn't have him 2 years ago. So you understand that. Like that. My theory, and I don't know if Shanahan adheres to this, but my theory is like he had a certain way he called things and he was fine with almost anonymous running backs, you know, Mostert, whoever. He could still do it. He got McCaffrey and it was such an incredible tool he just turned the offense over to him, which you understand. The guy almost did another 1,000 a couple years ago.
Right.
But that also meant that if you took him out of the equation when he got hurt in 24, things just stopped. They couldn't score touchdowns. They literally could not score touchdowns. This is an interesting, you know, development. Can you kind of bend it back the other way where you can still be efficient with, you know, more anonymous running backs? I think you can, but it is, time has told us that Christian McCaffrey, it's like McCaffrey and Trent Williams. Those are the two. If they don't have them, they don't win. They can win games. They don't want to. They've proven they can win games without Bosa. They've proven they can win games without Fred Warner. They've proven games they can win games without Brock Purdy when they have got Mac Jones as the backup.
Right.
If they have not proven they can win games without McCaffrey or Trent, and if they don't have them both like they did at the end of 24, things are not very fun.
Yeah. Trent, this is the problem, though. Again, running backs tend to see a good amount of drop off here after the age of 30.
Trent Williams, they tend to see it like at 28 or so. So McCaffrey's kind of avoided that part.
Correct. I mean, maybe, 29 years old last year, 3.9 yards per carry, man. Like, I don't know. Maybe we did see a little bit of a decline. That being said, Trent Williams, also 37 years old. If the 49ers offense is built around these two guys, that seems, I don't know, man. That seems somewhat problematic.
It's fragile, but also listen, you know, who else would you rather build it around, right? I mean, who's out there like say, okay, wait a minute, these guys, they don't have replacements for them,
right?
These are the right guys to build it around. It is fragile. Trent made it through most of the season last year, more so than he has in previous seasons. You're going to get banged up, particularly when he plays on artificial surface. And they do have if the Rams have artificial surface and the Seahawks have artificial surface. So it's always a little tricky, but he's super talented. If anyone can do it, it's Trent. He's not exactly the same as he was when he was 34, 35, but nobody is. You still would rather have him blocking Myles Garrett than not to have him block Myles Garrett. Not say the same thing about Christian McCaffrey. You do need to have a plan down the road for them, and that has been my criticism of them with the Trent. He has them over a barrel every time he's up for a new contract because they have no way to replace him. It's just not happening. There's been no plan. There's been no development. Now maybe they'll do it this time because he's going to be 38 during the season.
Yeah.
But again, is he worth $25 million a year? When Myles Garrett is showing up across the way two games a year, I think you want him there. You'd rather have him than Austin Pleasant or some whoever the backup is going to be this year, Javarian Lowe, whatever that is. So it is, yes, it's a great point. What are they going to be like when these guys are past their prime? And maybe that's right now, but I'll still take those guys until they show me otherwise. I'll take those guys. You just want to have some kind of replacement plan in place. They kind of do for McCaffrey. Well, they keep drafting running backs. They should have one eventually. But they'll never be the same when those guys have moved on. But that's the way it is with having great players. You'd rather have them and then have them, you know, run out their time than never have them at all.
I think that the 49ers are a pretty well-run organization. I love the culture that they have set. I love the fact that you hit on culture and how much that impacted some of their draft picks. Obviously, they got killed during the draft process for overdrafting a lot of these guys. But I think you're kind of sort of hinting at the fact that, look, they took a lot of character into consideration when they made some of these draft picks. That being said, Tim, if we could play this season out on Madden with injuries turned off, I think the 49ers look great. I think they look awesome. Unfortunately, they've got Christian McCaffrey, who's an older running back. They've got, again, Mike Evans, who should be one of the centerpieces for the passing attack. He's also an older player. We just talked about Trent Williams. We're talking about George Kittle. Haven't talked about George Kittle yet. He's coming off of an Achilles injury and is also a somewhat of an older player. Tim, it just seems as if this team, if they can stay healthy, but that's got to be the if is carrying so much of the load here.
Right. Yeah, well, and look what they went through in the last 2 years, right? They went through those injuries,
right?
And they're all older, and time doesn't stop, especially for NFL players. Now, they get really sensitive to this, and they get mad at me when I point it out. They have not drafted stars in the last two or three drafts. The last one they drafted was a pretty good one, Brock Purdy, with seventh round pick. But They don't have that line of this replacement. They're saying Mykal Williams is going to be one of those guys. He was fine as a rookie until he got hurt. Zero sacks, maybe one, whatever it was. Very, very little pass rush. Much more of a kind of edge, hold the edge guy, which is important in the NFL. They think Upton Stout, the slot corner, is one of those guys. Again, we'll see. But they don't have another Fred Warner, Christian McCaffrey, and they just don't have that. That's understandable. Those guys are tough to find, yeah. But it is fragile. They do have a young quarterback. That's pretty important. They have some other thing. They're hoping Stribling and, you know, Pearsall. There's other players in there in that mix. But, yeah, I mean, a team that has experienced a ton of injuries probably should expect to experience more injuries. This is the way life goes, and it is definitely on pins and needles through this, but every team could have injuries, right? Every team could. Nobody's, you know, capable of losing two or three Pro Bowlers and just not even blinking for sure. It away. They just are more likely to go through this as the older players are coming off injuries.
Yep.
It just, you know, what can you, I mean, we go through this in the Bay Area with the Warriors, like, oh my God, you know, Steph Curry, is he, let's say, what do you, we just forget about it. And I go, no, he's still pretty good. Like, I understand it's less of a chance than ever of them making a deep run, but would you rather do it with Steph Curry or not Steph Curry? Would you rather do it with Christian McCaffrey or not Christian McCaffrey? You'd rather do it with him and then see what you can patch through in the times that you can imagine he's going to miss.
Tim, I think the question I had in regards to the age and the injury concerns, does it change how Shanny coaches in terms of practice? There's been a lot of talk of Shanahan coaches these guys pretty hard, especially during practice to get them ready for games. But has there been a thought, okay, I've got a veteran team here. They don't need to work as hard during the practice sessions. Has there been any discussion at all from Shanahan's perspective, or maybe the OC's perspective or DC's perspective of, okay, maybe we don't work these guys quite as hard during practice time?
Well, I mean, it's mostly training camp is what I would point. There's they go through so many injuries at training camp, but Trent Williams does not practice all the time in training camp. I would say 50% of the practices. McCaffrey's probably 60%. Kittle's not going to be very much, I imagine. Like, they do hold those guys out. Doesn't mean that, you know, the injuries to other players don't hurt you, but it's not like they're putting those guys through hell. And Shanahan would tell you, if you don't practice like that, then you're not going to play like that. And I get that. I know I've seen some, you know, Philadelphia Eagles when I was young, in the late 80s, had some of the hardest practice. I thought it was what every team did. Reggie White, Randall Cunningham, Jerome, they were just brutal practices. I thought that then I covered other teams and it was nothing like that.
Yeah.
But they did it for a reason. It's like this, so you can play tough football in September. You're ready to do it. Your body's, you know, set up for this. And maybe some other teams won't be. Doesn't always work out like that, but I know Shanahan wants his teams to be physical, and he believes he has to work them hard in order for them to be physical when the games start. I don't think he thinks the Seahawks are having light practices, right? He thinks the Seahawks are having tough practices. Yeah. The Rams may be a little different. That whole Rams 49ers relationship, McVay Shanahan, is hilarious to me because they are true frenemies. They are buds and they want to kick each other's ass. No question about it.
Right.
But
no question.
They're not going to practice the veterans very hard because they're all hurt or old. Yeah. And other guys are going to get some time, and we'll see if they can get through this camp. Get through the camp. And then you have Australia. Believe me, everything is being talked about is pointed to that first game in Australia against the Rams. Can they survive that, those long flights? They're practicing several times in Melbourne. I don't think the Rams are going to get to Melbourne until like a day before the game. It's just total different approaches. Let's see who gets through that game, and it really could set the tone for both teams, certainly for the 49ers, since they're investing so much energy and time discussing and planning about it. Then maybe the rest of the season kind of tumbles from there. If they do all this and they are flat and terrible in Melbourne, it would be a pretty bad sign for one game. It's just one game, but it would be a game to your rival, and you're coming back and you're tired. It would be a very interesting situation to see. And if they kick, you know, they go crazy and they win 35-10, I think they'll be feeling really good going into week two of that season.
All right, there you go. Tim Kawakami, columnist at the SF Standard, longtime NFL and 49ers beat reporter. Go find his podcast, The TK Show, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Tim, we appreciate you joining us, man.
You got it. Appreciate it. Good conversation.
Great stuff and great information from both Matt Beauvais and Tim Kawakami. I want to thank them again for joining the podcast. But okay, we got to get out of here. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. Peace.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.